Your spouse does not understand you, and it's a completely an unfulfilling marriage. The children have their own lives. The family shows no appreciation of you, and you have very few securities. Your heart is turning cold, and you're becoming cynical, and you can see that day by day. God says, husbands, love your wives. Just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So what do? Trust and obey God, or go your own way? Or consider this. You've prayed for more than 7 years for a scholarship, and against all odds, you have actually got this scholarship to come and study in the United Kingdom. Studies and visa have both come to an end, and the Home Office will not renew your visa. God says, speak the truth one to another. Do not lie. So what do? Your friends say, go under. Get a new identity. Keep your head down. That's what everybody does. So what do? Trust God or play with your visa. You really want to get married, and you quite fancy him. Sadly, he doesn't seem to be a growing Christian. And already you've had to compromise on a number of points, but you fear singleness. And your friends encourage you to marry him. So what do? Trust God or play games. Now, if any of those profiles fit you or speak into your life in any way, then this old story about Abraham is really for you. So why don't we just pause for a moment and pray? Father, we do ask that the truths in this word would come alive to us, deaf ears would be opened, eyes would be opened as well, and our hearts, if they've grown cold, would be warmed by these words, so that we would trust you as we have just sung now. In the name of Christ we pray. Amen. Let's do a little bit of a background to this story. If you've been coming to these services in the evenings, you will know that we've been working through the story of Abraham. He has waited for 30 years, and a child has now been born to him in his old age, and Sarah is probably 90, he's probably closer to 100 himself. Ishmael, the son that he had got through his own private arrangements, has been sent away because God has said, Ishmael is not going to be the one that I fulfill my promise through. But now, God demands that this son, who is the son of the promise, Isaac, is sacrificed. If he obeys, then all that he has promised in the past, all that God has promised in the past, all the pilgrimage from the Ur of the Chaldeans to this place where we are on Mount Moriah, all of that would have become useless. And worse still, God seems to be acting in a characteristically ungodly way. This is not the God that Abraham has come to know. He's not acting as if he's a father this time. And he places Abraham on the ultimate test. Now in the past, when God has said to Abraham, move, he's given him a reason. Move from here, and I'll show you a place where you will go, and I will go with you. He's given him reason, and he said, I will go with you. But now, that God, who has been so generous to Abraham, says, just go and sacrifice your son. What does Abraham do? Trust God or play games with God? Well, let's go to the passage, shall we? It's the 22nd chapter of Genesis. The passage that was read for us, Genesis chapter 22. Let's look at the first verse. The first verse says this. Some time later, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham, here I am. You see that? God is testing Abraham. We need to catch that. We know it's a test. Abraham does not know that it's a test. So we are in the know, he is ignorant of what is happening. This is very much like Job. When God tests Job, we who can see this drama, which is taking place, scene 1 in heaven, and scene 2 down here on earth. We know it's a test, but Job doesn't. It's a similar test that Jesus placed before his disciples. Do you remember that story? He's in the boat with the disciples. He's tired and he's asleep on the cushion. And the waters are billowing around him. And the boat is going down. And they come to him and say, Master, do you not care that we are perishing? Jesus wakes up and says to them, what is wrong with you? Have you no faith? It's a similar sort of test. Now, the sort of faith and belief that God wanted of Abraham, that Jesus wanted from his disciples, was not just simple intellectual credence or a mere assent to some propositions that are put before him. Because that is not biblical evangelical belief. It's what George McDowell has called higher faith. That is what he is calling him to. And believing Jesus like that has to do with seeing Jesus as a person and relating with him. This higher faith God has and God is calling Abraham into is based on a relationship of trust with himself. Believe in me is what he is saying to him. It's a personal trust. It's a bit like falling in love. I have in the past prayed for many people who've come to me and they said, I would love to get married, and I've prayed for them. And my record has not been very bad. Almost all the women I've prayed for have got married. But and the last one is getting married in November. But sometimes I do wonder whether I should stop this ministry. Because it makes me wonder whether people have really thought what it is they are getting themselves into. Because there's no room for banality and triteness in a relationship of marriage. Or even in a relationship between God and you and me. Following God, just like marriage, can be a very dangerous thing. It will change you eternally. There's encouragement for you if you want to get married. What is it that Paul says in 2 Timothy 3:12? He says this, in fact, everyone who wants to follow a godly life in Jesus Christ will be persecuted. So claiming to trust God without passion, claiming to trust God without embracing a sense of danger and a sense of mystery, may soon be shown to be no trust at all. God is likely to present to you trials that can really and may really shock you. And what is that Jesus says again in Matthew 10:37? Anyone who loves his father and his mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Verse 38. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life is going to lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That's the sort of trust that Jesus is asking of us. So the life of faith says this, that nothing is more important than trusting this God, and that can be a very dangerous business. Now, the trouble with many of us Christians is that we want Jesus to do all the carrying of the cross. And we want him to do all that dying. And I call that the Sherpa mentality. You know the Sherpas? Very hardy people. They help people climb Mount Everest. They're in Nepal. And everybody who climbs up appreciates them because they are able to carry heavy loads for you. And there's a doggerel that says something about that relationship between the climbers and the Sherpas. Here it goes. Love the Sherpa, but he carries my load. Admire his fortitude, grit, and mental strength, but he carries my load. Pay the Sherpa to carry my load. When we become Christians, we don't get a Sherpa. We get a Savior, a Lord who is going to test our loyalty to him. Now, how should we respond when God tests us? Well, let's see what we can learn from this example from Abraham. So here we go, the first point. The first point is trust God, you can never improve on His plans for your life. Trust God, you can never improve on His plans for your life. Now let's go to the passage, 22 verse 1. You see it? Sometime later, God tested Abraham and He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." So like Job, Abraham was not privy to the fact that God is testing him. He does not know that this test is not going to lead to human sacrifice at all. God continues to test His people to see what our faith is made of. And His test is always for our good. And I hear you ask, how can the present circumstances, if you knew where I am, the tests that God is placing before me, how can that be for my good? Or if you knew the dire medical diagnosis that I have received, or a friend of mine has received, how could you say that that test is for my good? How can losing someone that you love be for God, for my own good or for my faith? Well, James, writing the letter, he anticipates these objections. And I would like us to take a quick moment and travel there. Let's go to James and hear what he says. The book of James, that is page 1213. James chapter 1, we'll pick up the story from verse 2. James chapter 1, verse 2. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given him." It takes wisdom from God to grasp how a trial, how a test can be good for you. You see it? And if you want to understand how it is, can be good for you, we are told, ask, and God will show you how that trial can be good for you. Think of it this way. Think of the marathon, or perhaps think of the Three Peaks Challenge, the National Three Peaks Challenge. The National Three Peaks Challenge involves climbing the highest mountain in Scotland, the highest mountain in England, and the highest mountain in Wales, preferably in 24 hours. And the way it goes would be, at least the way we did it, was you go to Fort William in Scotland, you touch the water there, and then you motor all the way to the bottom of Ben Nevis, you climb the top of Ben Nevis, come down, get in the car, come down all the way to England. We were getting there about midnight. And then you assault Scafell Pike. You then come down and motor all the way down to Wales. Early in the morning, climb up Mount Snowdon. And then when you finish, you come down Carnarvon, I think that's what it's called, and you touch the water there, hopefully under 24 hours. Now, why would anybody want to do something like that? Well, that test, through that test, you discover hidden resolves you never thought you had. Before I did that, quick story here, I had given up on my own knees, thinking that I could never run again. But I discovered new resolve through that pain that has allowed me to break through that pain barrier. You discover mental power that you can actually overcome the physical and the mental pain and the depleted energies that you have. You discover a new self-confidence, which you thought was only the reserve of Olympic athletes. In the same way, when God tests us, let's see verse 2. He says to him, "Sacrifice," Genesis 22, "sacrifice Isaac. There is a burnt offering on one of the mountains I'm going to tell you." Now, this is the ultimate test of a relationship. You see, when one party behaves as if they are breaking the contract, the social contract that exists between you. It's a bit like marriage. See, part of the reason we have a marriage certificate is to say to us, you know, by this certificate, I'm actually saying to you, I will not behave in a manner contrary to the person you have come to know and to love. That's part of why we have that certificate. And it's also part of the reason why we get so hurt when a person in that relationship acts contrary to what they've already promised. And here God seems to be behaving in a manner completely contrary to his character. How did Abraham respond? You see it? Verse 3. Instant obedience. Instant obedience. Verse 3. Early the next morning. It can't be more instant than that. Abraham got up. He saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and with his son Isaac. And when he had cut enough wood, still on verse 3, for the burnt offering, he set out for the place that God had told him about. Instant obedience. I used to have a friend like that who became a Christian, and we would hold Bible studies, and at the end he would say to me, "Wanyeki, why do we hold these Bible studies? It sounds as if we are arguing with God." For him it was, "God has said it, let's do it." Do you see it? 3 days Abraham is on this road. 3 days to change his mind in order to turn back. 3 days of roller coaster emotional turmoil as he looks first on his son, then he looks on the wood, and then he looks at the knife that he has. Does he flinch? Look at verse 5. He said to his servants, "I stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go there. We will worship and then come back to you." Can you see the faith he has? He knows that the God who has told him to sacrifice this boy will make it possible for him to come back. "We will worship, and then we will come back." See, he trusted God implicitly. Hebrews 11, please don't go there. Let me just remind you what it says. Hebrews 11, 19, it says this. Abraham reasoned that God would raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac from the dead. So Abraham thought, if this son of mine is going to be sacrificed, God is able to raise him from the dead. So when do you do, when every day your life seems to follow Murphy's law? Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. The answer is, trust God and obey. You see, he does not need a plan B, and you can never improve on that plan God has for your life. So when God seems to act in a way contrary to his character, remember this, that the trial is good. It's for our good. And he tells God nothing about us. And he usually tries us in a way in which it affects people closest to us. Do you see in this story? This trial involves Abraham, but it affects his wife. It affects his son. And it affects his staff. People he has employed, his servants, the son of promise, and his wife. They are all involved in this drama, and he has the responsibility to explain to them what God is doing. Now, men are increasingly diffident. We are increasingly uncertain about our roles because we don't want to come over as if we are control freaks and that come over as if we do not understand our wives or we are not respectful to them. Yet we are called to lead in a godly way. And Abraham had to explain this act of God to his family, his son, his wife, and the staff. We can be sure that God will never contradict his character. So what happens when we choose to go our own way rather than trust and obey? Well, we've been reading this story in Genesis, and we've met a man called Lot, whom we heard about last Sunday. He wanted to go his way. And although God may protect and will protect his people, he will not protect us from a tainted character or a tainted testimony or an ineffectual life such as Lot. See, going his own way meant that he found himself in Sodom, a place that was described last Sunday, and a place that is now associated with all the evil that we know about, the sexual depravity of that country. So what happens when Christians go against their marriage vows, such as the person might be tempted, the one that I mentioned in the beginning of this talk? Well, it affects everyone. What about that person who plays with their visa? They may still be Christian, but they are constantly having to look behind their shoulders, always hoping that they will not bump into the police, and always having to do a job usually less than they actually qualify for. there are consequences. What about that girl who wanted to marry that guy, although she felt deep in her heart the wrong one? Constantly, this person is going to avert the eye when they look God in the face. Now, Abraham has learned that following God leads to freedom. That faith which had started as a mustard seed has now grown, so that in verse 7, let's go there, in verse 7 he says this, Isaac asks, the fire and the wood are here. Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? It is by faith, this faith which has grown now, that he's able to say, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So be encouraged. God will build that little faith that you have if you trust and you obey him. And that is a way to find peace and to find joy in Jesus Christ. So there are two ways to live. You can choose to live as an orphan, and I don't use that word in a pejorative way, or you can choose to live as a son or as a daughter. A person who has a father and a mother and has known the nurturing, caring love of a parent or two parents learns to be secure. But an orphan, a person who is unfortunate enough to be bereaved early, will frequently find themselves always thinking about number one, watching their back, because they know that there's no one to look after them. There are two ways to live, as an orphan or as a son and as a daughter. We now come to the second lesson we learn from this story. This is from chapter 22 again, verse 6 to 12. Trust God because he provides. We see that at the very last moment in this story, God breaks in. We can never tell why God held the saving Isaac until the very last moment. And in the same way, I can't tell why God may be testing you the way that he is, or why he has left rescue for you in such a close end. And I can't tell you why he has chosen to deal with you the way he has, if he is testing you. But God can be trusted. And we see that in verse 12. Do you see that? 22 verse 12. Do not lay a hand on the boy, God says. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Now that Abraham's faith has been tested and has been proven to be real, now that he has passed that test, God breaks in. And we see the providence in verse 13. Do you see it? A ram is provided. A ram that is held by the horns. And many years ago, I herded sheep for a short time during school holidays. And I'll tell you this, rarely do they get caught. I've never found one that is caught by their horns. So clearly, God must have put this ram here. Why do they need this sacrifice, Isaac and the father? It's because both were sinners and both needed this sacrifice in order to be absolved from their sin. And God brings them to this mountain that is full of symbolism, Mount Moriah. This mountain is the future home of Jerusalem, the future home of the temple that Solomon built, the future home of the center of all the sacrifices for the nation of Israel. So this sacrifice is actually looking forward to the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And we look down many years later and we see that God now presents a lamb outside the city gates of Jerusalem. He provides that lamb. But this time it's not a sheep or a ram or an animal. It's a son. And this time there is no salvation for this son, because he is the sacrificial lamb whose blood is shed for you and for me. But I want you to notice something else. Please notice that Abraham's faith is still rational. His faith is still rational. When God says to him, stop, do not hurt this boy, his knife freezes in midair. See, madness and Christianity do not really go together. We are not zombies who are somehow controlled by forces which are beyond our control. Faith, as the mother of Jesus says, Mary in the Magnificat, faith is believing what God has said. not just following some wild ideas. And God has done everything to make our access to Him possible. And God can be trusted. He can be trusted because He can see all of history, from the beginning of history to the end of history. He knows your life from the beginning of your life to the end of your life. Trust the solution that God has provided for the fundamental problem of human beings, which is sin. Please do not make up your own solutions or trust other man-made solutions which cry out to be adopted. Many years ago, about 15 years ago actually, when I was working for UCCF, induction those days, what it is today, they usually give you a list and they told you go and work. And I was working in the central London part of the universities of London. And I got this list and I was working at King's College on the Strand with the Christian Union there. And I had a meeting at London School of Economics after the Christian Union meeting. And I did not want to be late for that meeting. So I said to the students, look, we need to go because we're going to get late. But students being students, they were not in any hurry. And so I thought, I'm leading the next meeting, I better go. And I didn't know how to get there. And I knew I did not have the time to find my way there. I also knew that it can take a man a long time to find where they are going, but men never get lost. This we know. So, because I didn't have enough time, I deployed Plan B immediately. It had to be the tube. And I knew a little bit about the tube, and I knew it was safe, and I knew how to get there once I was in the tube. So my brain at this time, infused as it was with the latest software of triangular coordination of the tube, it kicked into high gear. So I dashed out of King's College, turned right into Temple, got on the tube, circle or district, I can't remember, went east, went onto embankment to Tottenham Court Road, hopped off Central Line, Herborn, got out, turned left, 3/4 of a mile, got to London School of Economics, where I found my students sitting and waiting for me. How did you do that, I asked. Well, they said, when can we walk? You know, King's College is just across the road, you know. Well, Mary, thank you so much for not joining this lot in laughing at me. Do not trust man-made ideas. They really do not work, and they are quite odd. It doesn't mean that God will solve all our problems. But it does mean that one day Revelation 21 will be true. All the problems will be solved at that time. But for now, God has broken the backbone of our problem. That is sin. We come to the third point. Trust God because He blesses and He keeps His promises. God blesses and keeps His promises. You see that in verse 15. Let's go there. 22:15. The angel of the Lord called Abraham from heaven a second time, and he said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this, and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand in the seashore. Do you notice that? Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies. Verse 18. And though your offerings and through your offspring, all the nations on earth will be blessed. Because you have obeyed me. We look back at that many years from now. And although it is true that all the nations of the earth have not yet knelt before the Lord. But if you look even at a publication like Briley's publication on the Atlas of the Christian World, the churches that are Trinitarian, at least 1.7 billion people would claim to be Christians. And the numbers are growing. And through that sacrifice that God has done, you too can become part of that. Yes, there is opposition. We see that in verse 17b. It says, there will be opposition and the church faces opposition. Do you see it? Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies. So there will be opposition. What have we said? When God tries you, do not waste the trial. And you will waste the trial if you think that this trial is anything but the perfect will of God for you. You will waste this trial if you trust anything other than God to be glorified through the trial that you're going through. Please do not squander the trial with excuses like, oh, I'm not clear what God is actually saying to me. While deep down in your heart, you actually do know you're really plumbing, you're really fishing for an answer from God that is more to your liking. Do not squander a test on the excuse that you're being cautious, while really it's lack of faith. Lift up your eyes to the place where God's provision is. Put your faith in Him and obey, because God loves you. And He is God. He knows all, and you are not. Now, towards the end of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, if you watch that film, Lucy, the little girl, is standing at the terrace of that amazing castle. And she's looking down, and she can see Aslan, the lion that stands for Jesus, padding his way across the eastern sea, the seashore on the eastern sea. And he's just walking away. And she has no idea why Aslan is leaving. And Mr. Tumnus, her fawn friend, comes over at the terrace, if you remember that scene, and she says, look, you cannot understand Aslan's ways. You cannot understand everything about Aslan's way. And then he says this, don't worry, one day we will see him again. When? Asks Lucy. In time. One day he's here, and the next he is gone. But you must not press him. He's not a tame lion, you know. Lucy is very pensive, and she says, no, but he's good. And then as Lucy wipes her tears away, they both look up, and Aslan is gone. Now, living in this culture where the weight of God, where God is gagged frequently, and where he's presented as weightless, it's very easy for us to think of his promises and his word as weightless, and God as a toothless lion. But no one can domesticate God, and no one can stop God from fulfilling the promises that he has. No one can stop God from fulfilling the things that he has said. We don't often understand why God does the things that he does, but we can be sure that he's not tame, and we can be sure that he's good. And Lucy's confidence in Aslan can be our confidence today. Though we don't understand everything that he does and why the world is the way it is, we can be always certain of this, that he is good and he can be trusted.